It's 3 o'clock. I have a question for you. Do you know before politicians die, everything is political in your life? From the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician says, that's not true, look at your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We're going to be discussing in these shows those that are working for you and those politicians who are working against you. Just because they are a Democrat and just because you voted as a Democrat or voted as a Republican your entire life, maybe you don't know. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit. And we're going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to let you ask them questions. We're also going to be discussing the education system, the military, science, sports, healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-old children still on the healthcare plan? Or, as the Progressive Party says, Obamacare? We're going to bring you everything you need to know, because this is the last word on everything. From the cities, counties, states, the entire nation, and the world. So sit down, get a pencil, piece of paper, and take this hour or two, sometimes three, as a classroom experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. I'm Michael Lawrence. Yes, sir. So I hear. Put that on. I took it off. Oh. We're here. 3 o'clock. It is, we got a couple of glitches still going on here, but, we're getting at home. We're still moving, unpacking the boxes, moving everything in for everybody to hear what is going on. We have a lot of things going on today. I am telling you. I'm looking up at the monitor right now, looking at the minister making an address to the NRA, telling them how many varmints he shot in the last couple of weeks. Because, you know, that's what he doesn't shoot big game like deer. They're liable to charge him. So he shoots at the little varmints like squirrels and a little bit of rabbit here and there, maybe a little snake. That's the hunting he does. And, you know, what do we think about this nonsense that he has said about women's rights? Now, he pulled his wife into the whole scheme of things. He pulled her in. Nobody pulled his wife into this. And believe me, what are we talking about here? When has his wife worked? Yes, we know. Yes, it is a tough time being a wife when you have kids. But she didn't have five kids at once. She had one child at a time. Yes, I know that's not the right thing to say. Yes, because we're not dismissing what women do every single day. We're not dismissing how hard work it is, and women who stay at home, they need to get a pension. They need to get Social Security for the work that they do in the house. But the problem I have with this, that's not what Hillary Rosen was talking about. This woman had money the day she married Mitt Romney. And I guarantee you the last 20 years of their married life, she was not taking care of any kids, and she didn't have to clean a house. She's never worked. Maybe she worked when she was in high school before she knew him, but I don't know if she's a Mormon or not. We know the women that are Mormons work. They work because the men make them work. But besides that, even if she's not a Mormon, the problem that Hillary Rosen was saying is that she has never worked a day in her life, and that's the fact. She hasn't. As a woman who a stay-at-home mother, yes, she has worked. But we have women every single day that go to work and come home and have to take care of the house and clean and cook for their husbands. And you can't tell me that Mitt Romney's wife is coming in cleaning every day when she from a job that she don't come from. She wasn't cleaning every day when she was a stay-at-home mother. She had maids. I mean, after all, they have five houses. I'm sure she didn't travel each day to a house to clean it up. So what are we talking about? Now they got a four-car garage that's inside the house? I mean, this is completely ludicrous. It's completely ludicrous. The nonsense that they're trying to perpetrate on the American public. But you see, the only people that buy that is the people who are low information people who listen to Fox News. Because I want to tell you something. I was so furious. I was sitting at the table watching the news the other day. I was talking to my wife when the prosecutor Corey came out and said that she was going to file murder 2 charges against Zimmerman. Well, every channel was carrying this live except Fox News. Now, I wonder why that was. They did not carry, because I have picture in picture, and I have 3 TVs that I can look at very close to one another. I had picture in picture for Fox News and MSNBC, and the other TV was on CNN. What Fox News did was they gave a 5-minute wrap-up after she had her press conference and told you what she said. Again, low-information voters are the ones that listen to Fox News. That's why they don't know anything. And they do not want people to know anything. You have their standard bearer, who's going to be definitely Mitt Romney, who has gone back and forth with so many positions, more than a ping pong ball. He has gone back and forth. When he was the governor of California, how the heck do you think he became governor of Massachusetts? I mean, as an ultra-conservative, there is no way he could have got elected. So now they're saying that he's saying, oh, no, I was an extremely conservative governor. What the heck does extremely conservative mean? He didn't pass anything extreme when he was governor. He passed Obamacare as governor. What kind of extremeness is that? What are we talking about here? Now he's running away from it. It was only good for Massachusetts, but it wasn't good for anybody else. The people in Massachusetts are lame, a low information people, so he passed off anything on them. The mere fact, and we're going to get into this in future programs, but the mere fact that you and I, who work, you and I, are working salaries, are paying for everyone that goes into the hospital. Paying for everyone that's going to the hospital. Now, see, I got a call. Now, who is calling on his phone? Who is this, Craig? Yes, you need to call on the number I gave you. Oh, goodbye, because I'm on live. Yes, you see, they call it that. The people don't listen. See, now this is incredible. I just sent a text message out to one of the people that's running for, we're going to hear from later, county commission. People don't read their text messages. People don't read their messages. We have these fancy phones. We have these phones that have so much information on it. And this is a major problem why people don't understand what's going on, why there's so much confusion. Because back in the day, which was, we're not talking about 100 years ago. We're talking about 10 years ago. People weren't walking around with cell phones sticking out of their ears or Bluetooth. The information they got was when they got in their car and they were driving and the news came on for a five-minute break, or when they came home and they sat down and listened to the evening news, or they read their newspaper. That's all the information they got. We are bombarded now, not just since CNN first came out, 24-hour news, but news on three major cable networks. We're bombarded with still the same news from ABC, the big three, ABC, CNN, ABC, MSN, NBC, and ABC. So that's six different sources for news. Now, we need to be able to understand what is going on. But how do you decipher what is going on? How do you understand that the information you're getting might be slanted? You listen to all three. You try to listen to all three and take that information in. That's what you do. Otherwise, there's no way that you can decipher all this information. Now, we have an arrangement in my house, because I DVR everything that comes on television. Right now, I have about 244 programs that I need to, it wouldn't be 244, it's probably about 244 hours worth of information on different programs that I have DVR'd. So the problem is that I need to be able to get time to look at all that information. I can't do it. So what I do is I take I'm up till 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, going back and looking at the information, getting that information, and then saying, well, do I need this or not? And then I erase it. So it takes, the weekend is when I'm really tied up going through information. But I try to put some of that aside because my wife starts looking at me cross-eyed saying, do you live here? Are you ever going to come to bed? Are you ever going to speak to your grandkids? Are you ever going to talk to me? Your eyes are on the TV or your eyes are in the computer. And this is what it has come to. We have now become fanatical, some of us. Some of us have become fanatical. So what we're going to have today is we are going to be speaking to, in North Carolina, we have a major, major, major primary coming up. North Carolina, especially in Mecklenburg County, which is the largest county in North Carolina, President Obama won by more than 100,000 votes. That's the reason why President Obama won North Carolina. Now, there's going to be some people who are going to dispute me, saying, no, we did it here. We voted here in North Carolina. But, hey, listen, North Carolina, Mecklenburg County, where I live, I'm just going to say we did it. I don't believe there's any place else where the president won by more than 100,000 votes. So what needs to be done is that we need to do that again. And that means we need to get people also that can help this president when he's in office. We need to have people that can help him get legislation through. That means we not only have to help him on the local level, but we have to help him on the state and the county level. State, city, state, and county. That means we need to win back, which we have right now, the governorship, which is a Democratic governor. We need to get another Democratic governor. But we need to take back the House. I believe it was the first time in about 125 years that we lost the House. I think maybe we lost it one time about 15 years ago, but it was only for 2 years. But the last 125 years, most of the time, about 120, 122 years, they've been in Democratic hands. Well, right now it's not in Democratic hands. And it was very, and it wasn't for this governor, we would have a voter ID law here. But the Progressive Party has not been able to override the governor's veto. So we don't have an ID law here. But getting back to what we're going to do in today's program, we're going to be having, you're going to be hearing from some very well traveled people that are going to be running for the county commission. You're going to be hearing from some people that are going to be running for district court judge, and one that's going to be running for re-election as district court judge. You're also going to be hearing from an individual who's going to be running for the lieutenant governorship. So we are going to have a very, very packed program. Let's see who we got on the air here. Let's see who this is. Hello.
Hello.
And who is this?
This is Craig Maddens, running for county commissioner at large.
Craig Maddens. Well, Mr. Maddens, see, you don't read your information that I send out. You see, I have to be very difficult with you. Because I need you to call back. When you call, you need to call back like 4:19. See, if you had read your email, you would know.
So you want me to call you back at 4:19?
Correct. That's when I'm having all the elected official, all the people that are running for county commissioner, call in.
So I can't talk to you now?
I'm sorry, you can't talk to me now. But you see, since you're on the air, I'll let the people, you can put a little plug in for what you do in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina.
You mean what I do for a living?
What you do for a living, besides call the wrong time and don't listen to your PDA.
Well, I am a businessman. I was raised here, and I started a new concept. Well, I guess you would classify me as an entrepreneur. I started a new concept in home repair and maintenance, if you will, a referral network called HOCOA, H-O-C-O-A, HOCOA, the Home Repair Network, which is obviously a network of service providers and homeowners that use our service just like a live, living Yellow Pages. We're on call for our clients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with no music, no extensions, the old-fashioned way. And believe it or not, nobody gets tape recorded for better service or training purposes. So an individual, a homeowner, if you will, that needs a service, I don't care how small it is, for a handyman or heating and air, electrical, appliance or plumbing, or any kind of major renovation or decking or fencing or landscaping or tree service, maids and exterminators, we've got the paint, we've got the concrete and the brickwork, we have basically, in a nutshell, I can move the piano, tune the piano, and even teach you how to play it. We've got computer techs. We got everybody. All you do is call in, tell us what you want. You hang up the phone. We have these preferred people call you back. They've all gone through a live interview. We check their rates, their references. They're all insured. We even do a background check. And to my knowledge, being one of the longest running and largest referral networks in the country, we're the only ones that do the background check. And then our clientele, such as if you wanted to use one of our service providers, you actually pay them, not us, so you get the opportunity of the lowest rate. And then we do a follow-up call after it to make sure you are taken care of. Our people will show up. They'll return phone calls. Again, they're insured. Again, you pay them, not us. If they fail to perform, we kick them out.
So everybody understands, this is not a paid political announcement or a paid commercial announcement. I just happened to ask you this.
Yes, that's correct. Then, Michael, we started franchising this concept around the country, so now we are coast to coast. We've got, obviously, franchises out in California, and we've got them in Maryland and Virginia and Pennsylvania and Georgia and Ohio and North and South Carolina and, Virginia, Oklahoma, Texas. We're all over the place.
And do you go after small varmints like Mitt Romney shoots?
Well, you know, Mitt is a strange bird, to say the least. It just goes to show what happens when people don't pay attention to the voting public.
Well, I thank you. Since you, this was is not a paid commercial announcement, you can call back at 4:19.
Yeah, at 4:19. So I can't do my political stuff. You know, there's so many people running. Why don't you just let me talk now or answer a question or two for you?
It would be unfair.
Why would it be unfair?
Because we're unfair. We don't want to be unfair.
Okay.
I will call back. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I'll call you back.
Bye. Okay. Now, that was really unsolicited. He did not read his information. He was supposed to call it a 4:19. But since I had him, hey, I gave him a little shot at now, see, I got somebody else. Who, these people do not read their information. Let me just I will tell him where to call in. This is another guy who's supposed to be calling in. And they don't understand. They don't do what I asked them to do. Now, that is unbelievable. I can't believe this. See, the last minute, all these people need to do, they just have to read their email. That's all. But anyway, what I was saying before I was interrupted, we have a problem in this country because of the amount of information that is given out. The problem is people do not know what the truth is. And the thing is that if they don't know what the truth is, how do they determine what the truth actually is? This is very difficult because a lot of people do not understand, and this is what was not my term, but it's a term that has been out there, media literacy. What is media literacy? Media literacy is the access of information in a variety of forms. Access through and then understanding, critical viewing, critical thinking, critical listening. If you don't have those three skills, this information that is shot out of a cannon at you all at one time is nothing but a blur. Now, we have, I was talking to my cousin in Florida about the Trayvon Martin case, and we might have him on next week. We're going to be going in depth on the Trayvon Martin case. But as you see, there's an organization called ALEC. And ALEC is the one that pushed these laws about stand your ground through the Congress. They didn't actually do it. They had the legislatures do it. ALEC stands for the American Legislative Exchange Council. And their whole thing is to write the laws that legislatures pass. So, in other words, you're sending a representative, congressman, state senator, to Congress to represent you. Now, when you vote for them, you figure that they have enough knowledge and enough understanding that they can represent you, the voter, the one that put them in office. You did not elect them to go get the information that they're going to put into laws from some outside paid entity who has an agenda of their own, which may or may not be your agenda, to take the information from them, put it in legislation, and present it as a law that you want passed, as a bill you want passed. Not a law, but a bill. Now, if that's the case, why won't we just put ALEC into position as our senator or our representative? In 24 of these states that have these standalone grounds, ALEC, the organization, was instrumental in writing the law that the congressman or senator proposed as a bill. That congressman and senator did not write that themselves. They took it verbatim from ALEC. Now, that shows you how dumb some of these senators or representatives are. And how do we know this? Because one moron in one of the states out west took exact wording, the exact, where the periods are, where the commas were, the exact wording, and pasted it into a bill that he then presented on the floor of his state house. That's how come we know. What else do we know? They went back and started looking at most of these bills for Stand Your Ground, and they would not pass the Plagiarism Act. But ALEC isn't going to charge them with plagiarism because ALEC gave it to them, and all they did was just change a couple of words. So we're not getting representation. People think we're getting representation, but we're not getting representation. We're getting representation from the corporation that Mitt Romney said were people. And that's how they get away with it. They are the corporations that are producing the laws in our country now, not the people. And pretty soon, these same corporations will be taking your rights away. How? Because they can. They keep saying, oh, bureaucrats are doing it. You know, that's a nice word. If you ever ask any of these regressive party members, who are the bureaucrats? Name a bureaucrat by name and not a blank face. They wouldn't be able to do it. And what should be done every single time one of these regressive party members says, oh, yes, the bureaucrat. Well, good. Give me the name of the bureaucrat. Why would you say the bureaucrats? Name me the bureaucrat. Romney was just on television making a speech to the NRA. He was saying, since Obama's been in office, the federal government has increased in its employment. 150,000. He's been in office for almost 4 years, and you're telling me only 150,000 people were hired by the federal government? If that was private industry, what the heck would you think Mitt Romney would be saying then? It's outrageous that we only have 150,000 people hired. Yes, 150,000 people. But how many have been thrown out through closing of agencies and through attrition have not been brought back? Millions. Millions. How many private industry jobs have been hired, have come online since Obama has been president? Millions. More private industry jobs have been put into operation since Obama has been president than the entire 8 years of George W. Bush. There was a net loss of over 2 million jobs when Bush was in office in his 8 years. A net loss. We have now I believe it's 4 million. That's a net of 6 million jobs in the private industry since the president has been in office. I guess that's why they don't trot out George Bush making some speeches, huh? They don't want people to remember all those good old times they had. When the man before George W. Bush had an estimate of 22 to 24 million jobs that were in the private industry that were gained. So what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? How can we just, how do these people even can look at themselves in the face? How can they look at themselves in the face and say these lies? Because the people they're saying it to are low information people. That's how they can say it. That's how they get away with it. If you've got a computer, you can look up the stats yourself. Don't let me tell you. Look it up yourself. Ask the question. That's what Google is for. Bing. MSNBC. They all can give you that answer. But you never hear them at the FOX channel telling people to do that. You never hear the drug addict from Florida that comes on in the afternoon telling you to do that. He says, no, I am the know-it-all. You don't need to know anything. Just listen to me. Well, you got a major problem if you listen to someone who tells you to listen to me. He's not God. Yes, the only person you need to listen to, besides your mother and father, or your husband or your wife, the fat boy is not all-knowing. He's all blowhard and an addict. But that's all right, because he was a good addict. He didn't have to mug people. He only got doctor shopped. That's all he did. So therefore, that's good. That's good, because he is not the type of person that is going to try to fool you. We got this other nut job Hannity, big head. And what did he do? He got involved with this this Trayvon Martin case by this guy Zimmerman calling me up. I hope Hannity gets called up by the special prosecutor. Because you heard what the two lawyers for Zimmerman said. We don't know where he's at. He wouldn't call us, but he called Sean Hannity. Well, I don't see Sean Hannity defending him. What did he tell Sean Hannity that he couldn't tell his lawyers? So you see, there is a double standard here. There is a double standard here. We need to understand that people have to learn. Information is out there. Where you get the information from is up to you, but it should not be from one source. There are multiple sources, and not just television. You have the newspaper, you have the internet, because the newspapers can be powerful also, because it depends on who's writing the newspaper. If it's Rupert Murdoch, you got a problem there. Because it's slanted. Slanted for the way his organization wants it to be. Now, hey, you could say that about a lot of newspapers, that newspapers are slanted. But again, you can't get your information from one source. It needs to be from multiple sources. So, just take my advice. Listen to everything, not just to one outlet for information. Now, we should be having, I don't know if it's a technical difficulty from our callers or not, but if we have any calls, anybody wants to call in, they can call on 646-716-5242. That's 646-716-5242. The last word with Michael Lawson. And we should be having our judges on very, very shortly. Let's see. One of the other things that we're going to be hearing from is, well, I should say what we'll be talking about is the different characteristics that the other side, the regressive party, refers to our president as. Now, we have, let's see, why isn't he, is he on the line listening? Okay, you need to call. He says he's on the air, but I don't see his name up here. And I say, you need to call the number. I have this, what is this, call again, okay, well, should I call again? No, I won't call again, let him call me. Anyway, there are a lot of people that have literally said the President of the United States is this, the President of the United States is that. But why have they said these things about this president? The first thing they say to you is, oh, no, but they said that about George W. Bush. No, not. It was not done. They did not do that with George W. Bush. I want one person to tell me one time any Democrat said, well, you should in host queue. Where's the host queue at? Let's see here. What is this? Screen. I don't see him. He says he's in the host call in. I don't see him. Let me tell him. Hang up and call. He says he's in the host queue, but I can't see him. Hang up. Hang up. And call. Back the number. See, he says he's in there, but I don't see him. We got a host queue here. There's a little technical difficulty. He says, hold on just a minute, hang up and call back the show. Now, let's see here. Do I, if I go in.
Hello?
Yes.
I am trying to call in for Michael Lawson. He was expecting my call at 3:30. I've been in the host queue but can't get through to him.
I'm on there too, evidently. Is this June?
This is Gina Caller.
Okay, Gina, this evidently you and I both are on here and can't get through.
Okay. I guess I'll just keep trying. So you're trying to call in to the show?
Yeah,
you
told me to call in. I've been calling forever.
Okay.
So evidently we're in there,
but
they just
can't clean
over.
I was listening for a while, and they said that they were expecting calls. Thank you.
Hello.
Miss Lawson.
Finally. Finally.
Hi, Judge Culler. Sorry, I've been in the queue since 3:30.
There was a problem on the live streaming.
Oh, okay.
I am so sorry.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. I was listening to you for a while on the air, and then I heard you talking about the judges were supposed to be calling in. So.
And I'm telling you, I don't know. And I didn't get a signal that I was off line until I saw the question mark come up over the phone call. And then I said, oh, my gosh, I'm not even on the air. Well, I am so glad you hung on, Judge. And for everybody that was listening, I hope you come back. I am talking at present with Judge Jenna Culler, and she is a district court judge here in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, the largest county in the state. And Judge Culler has been a major person in this county because, as far as I'm concerned, there is nobody more important than a district court judge. They affect our lives every single day, more than the governor, more than your city councilman, more than your county commissioner, more than the president. And we need to change how we vote. We need to make sure that people vote from the last page forward, because you cannot leave the judges out. Can you tell us, Judge Culler, a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. My name again is Judge Jenna Culler. I am a district court judge here in Mecklenburg County. I have been on the district court bench in Mecklenburg County since 2008 and proudly serve in this community, the citizens of Mecklenburg County. Just for the listeners, a district court in North Carolina covers several different areas. One area is misdemeanor criminal matters, anything from speeding tickets to assaults to domestic violence to DWIs. Family law matters can be property division, child custody disputes, and everything that goes along with a dissolution of a marriage, juvenile court, and civil courts with $10,000 or less in controversy. Those are the major areas that district court judges preside over. I practiced myself for about 20 years in Mecklenburg County before I became a judge in 2008, and I did practice in every area that I've just gone over that the district court judges preside over. I felt like that was important to have that experience in every area, even if you don't end up presiding over every area of the law. Currently, I preside predominantly in family court in Mecklenburg County. About 4 out of every 6 weeks, I am assigned to family trial courts, and that's kind of where my passion does lie. Most days when I go to work, I am making decisions that affect the best interests of children, and I myself am a mother of 3 teenagers, and so in addition to the legal experience, I feel like I'm bringing a little bit of applicable life experience to the table with that as well. But that truly has been my passion. I do practice in the other courts as well, where I'm also very passionate about, in our criminal misdemeanor courts and civil courts and domestic violence courts. I also serve on several committees with our court systems here locally to continually try to improve the court system. No court system is perfect. Ours is the best in the world, but we still always have plenty of room to improve. I work on the local domestic violence committee to help improve and streamline the way our courts handle domestic violence cases, both criminal cases and the issuance of restraining orders. I work on our family law bar committee to help streamline how domestic cases are heard, and that's going to be very important. I saw that there's going to be on the news tonight about the funding, our state funding of our family courts, which is very, very important.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, if someone is brought into your court and they were picked up by the police for vagrancy or, you know, something like that. But this is like the fourth or fifth time that they're brought into your court for the same thing. And they clearly have a problem with a mental problem.
Right.
Is that something that you handle?
Well, if it depends on what crime they've been charged with.
Right.
If it is vagrancy, just in that in of itself, and they do come back over and over. What I try to do, that is one of the type things that might come before a district court judge.
Right.
And, you know, where kind of my philosophy and how to handle that is trying to find an underlying solution to the problem. It doesn't solve the problem to throw someone in jail for whatever your minimum or maximum, whatever sentence you can give them.
Mm-hmm.
And we are governed by guidelines. We can't
right.
do whatever we want to do. The law restricts us into what we want to do. But anytime you can try to get someone, whether it be mental health treatment or drug treatment, if it's an underlying drug problem, then that helps everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It helps the person that's been charged, and it helps the community at large when you try to look for solutions to
mm-hmm.
what the underlying problem is. So
mm-hmm.
I do guess those are type things that would come before a district court judge, and that's sort of my philosophy on how to try to handle that type of stuff.
Okay, hold on just 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, who we have on the other line?
Rod, right.
Okay, hold on just a minute, Roderick. Judge Keller, the reason why I asked that question is because that we have when I first got here, there was a major, major push to help people that had mental problems. And the funding has been cut drastically for that.
Yeah.
So the recidivism for people who have mental problems who go into our jail cell only pick up room for the actual real criminals that belong there. And I know do you have anything in your power that you can do as a judge so this person can go get actual help, or are your hands so tied you gotta just go and send them into jail?
No, your hands aren't completely tied. You have, when you're dealing with sentencing and misdemeanors, you have to abide by the structured sentencing guidelines, which tells you the different types of sentences that you can give, which can be active punishment for them to go in jail, or it can be a suspended, what's called a community punishment, which is something less than going to jail, but you give them a suspended sentence. And a lot of times, like I said, in that sort of problem solving in their sentencing, is to order them to get mental health treatment, and then you can do. You have several options as far as if you have them on, say, for example, supervised probation, then you have a probation officer that can follow them and make sure that they are getting the mental health treatment that you have ordered pursuant to your probation conditions. And that is sort of their stay out of jail card, is do this and get your mental health treatment, or continue to take your medication that you've already been prescribed. Because a lot of times you'll have people that have been on medication and have already been diagnosed and have been prescribed, and they go off their medication, and that creates part of the problem. So that's some of the problem-solving sentences that I was kind of referencing a little while ago.
Well, you see, the thing is, if the funding from the state, since this regressive party has been in office, has been skewed and cut back so much, you have no place to send these people. I mean,
well,
my daughter worked in the capacity as a counselor, and she was at the jails. She worked in the jails for almost a year. And she said that some of the people she saw 5, 6, and 7 times. And the only thing that they need is mental health. But they don't get it in the jail. So, I mean, they're taking up space where we might have a capacity of people full, the jails are full, but you might be able to let go one-third of those people if they had another mental health facility to send them to.
Like I said, you've hit right on a serious problem, and you know, the more that the budgets are cut for providing things like mental health treatment and drug treatment courts and that type of thing, it does tie your hands and limits you to the volume of cases you can send to for those type of treatments.
Right.
We still do have that available to us, and certainly any time that is available, I'd certainly try to utilize that to solve the underlying problem. But there, you know, sometimes there are limitations, and budget cuts don't help.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many years have you been on the court now?
About 3.5 years.
3.5 years, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And your district covers what?
My district is Mecklenburg County. It is one of many judicial districts across the state of North Carolina. Mecklenburg County is the 26th judicial district of North Carolina. Some of the smaller counties, they have several counties that make up a single district, but Mecklenburg County and the 26th district of North Carolina are one and the same in our court system.
Okay, and that 26B, 26A, but it's just 26?
No, with district court, it's all just 26. When you talk about superior court judges, they are divided up into 26A, B, and C, and they are all within Mecklenburg County, but the districts are cut up within Mecklenburg County, and that's how they are appointed or elected, is within those districts that are subdivided in Mecklenburg County.
Okay.
But we have 21 district court judges in Mecklenburg County. When I said this is my district, I don't mean I certainly do not handle it alone. There are a lot of colleagues of mine, and there are 21 district court judges sitting in Mecklenburg County right now.
Okay, just hold on a minute. Next we have Roderick Wright, who is a lawyer in Mecklenburg County. And Roderick, can you tell us something about yourself?
Just briefly, I've been practicing law for 15 years. I came out of Chapel Hill School of Law in 1997. I practiced in Fayetteville in the public defender's office there for 4 years. And then in September 2011, moved to Charlotte, opened my office here, doing federal and state work, trial court level work and appellate work over these last 15 years, civil and criminal court. Domestic, family, primarily criminal work, which is where the judge who's not seeking re-election for this seat, the seat that I'm running for, is currently sitting in criminal court.
Mm-hmm. And why do you want to be a district court judge?
Well, it's been this I've just been pondering and thinking about for several years. I've been throughout this state. Actually, I counted up, I think, 15 counties that I've practiced in. I've appeared in front of just over 100 judges, and I've seen a lot that do a very good job. But I also see some improvement that I want to make where I can contribute in a different way. I think that obviously I want to do what I can to protect the people and the property of this county, but I also want to do something to the extent that I can about this, what I call assembly line justice and this revolving door, because I think they work together. When we just bring people in the system and put them out quickly without addressing, as Judge Kohler was speaking of, the root causes, to actually find a solution that changes things, and I want to be a person who contributes to doing that, to giving the type of individual attention that's needed in an efficient way, but given the type of attention that can address those root causes and keep folks from just cycling back through. Mm-hmm. And kind of when y'all were speaking on outside of budget restraints, I think one of the things with the folks with mental health who are often committing small things such as trespass and and minor violations such as that, by the time they get their day in court, because most of those folks don't have money and can't make a bond, by the time they get before the judge sometimes, they're already past the sentence that the judge can give in terms of active time and structured sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
I think expediting that process, maybe having some type of, maybe if officers have an additional court date to try to get those folks before the court, because if the judge can't do anything but time served, then they can't enforce any treatment. If you get that person to court quicker, then you have more time left within structured sentencing available in order to have the leeway to put conditions in place to actually try to stop the recidivism.
Right. Well, you see, now the question I have with for both of you, and I take Judge Culler first, is that we have a there's nothing that you can do about the laws and the way they're written, and your sole ability in hearing a case, you are, how much leeway do you have? And I know it depends upon the type of case, but some people would say, well, you're interpreting the law, and that's not the way it's written. But in my estimation, the law isn't, in a lot of cases, black and white.
That's very true.
There's a lot of shades of gray. And how do you determine what shade of gray you're going to use?
Well, that's a very good question. And some areas of the law are more black and white, and some areas of the law are more gray. And when you have something that is black and white, it's a little easier and more clear-cut. You hear the facts of the case. In a criminal case, you determine guilt or innocence. In a custody case, you're determining what's in the best interest of children. And you have various standards that you are to follow in the law depending on what type of case that you are handling. Our laws are basically set out with our statutes, which our General Assembly sets forth the statutes, and we have to follow those. And then we have our appellate courts that when the trial court makes a decision and somebody doesn't like the shade of gray that say that the judge has chosen, they will send it up to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals will interpret the law and say whether or not the trial court judge followed it correctly, didn't follow it correctly, should have done additional stuff than what they did. And so you have these appellate decisions in addition to the statutes to guide you about what to do. And there are some areas and specific issues that you come across that there are answers and clear answers. There are a lot of areas where there are not clear answers. And there are a lot of areas where district court judges in particular have a lot of discretion. The sentencing guidelines that Mr. Wright and I have mentioned, there are ranges within the guidelines that the judge can sentence. It's not that you have to do exactly 30 days. It is you have a range within which you can do. And in domestic cases, which, like I have said, that I preside over a lot of those, when you're determining what's in the best interest of children, there's a lot of subjective stuff that does go into it, and that's why it's very important that you have people on the bench that do have some experience, not only in the law, but some life experience to, you know, apply what some sound common sense principles in determining these things where there is a bit of discretion.
Right. Let's see, Roderick, and I want to ask you, because I know Judge Culler is not practicing law now. She is the law. But what I'm saying, you're practicing law. Have you ever had a case where you have gone to court and after you got there, you said, you know what? This person is guilty. You know, and your job as a defense lawyer is to represent that person whether they're guilty or not. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, a lot of people will say, well, gee whiz, if you knew they were guilty, you need to just throw them to the wayside. Well, you know, even Al Capone had representation.
Correct.
So has there ever been a time after the fact that you said, you know, I did my best for this person and the person was found guilty, but you knew they were guilty? I mean, is this something that would bother you, or does it bother you? I mean, if it's ever happened. I've always wanted to ask this question. That's the reason why I'm asking it to you.
Okay. The way I would say it is this. One, I do believe that everybody's entitled to a defense, and even folks who are, you know, quote-unquote guilty, their rights have to be protected in order for the innocent person's rights to also be protected.
Right.
As far as having difficulty, no. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I tell you, when you're representing somebody, and I've represented persons who were I'm standing beside them in trial, and they're facing 10 years or 20 years or life in prison. And as an attorney, you make hundreds and hundreds of decisions. And there's a lot of art to it. Knowing the law is the first step. And obviously, if you're in trial, there are decisions, even just your tone of voice, the pace of your speech, what witnesses you call.
Right.
And there's no exact right or wrong to what you choose to do. So if somebody's truly innocent and you're representing them and you're standing beside them and you're really the only person who can really fight for them, you're their voice, and they're facing decades of life in prison, that is a tremendous amount of pressure. Not the pressure they feel, but that is a tremendous amount of pressure. So if that person, you truly, truly believe they're innocent, you know, think about having a second guess. What should I have done differently so that this person wasn't wrongfully convicted? What did I do wrong? If they're guilty, it's still, you fight just as hard, but it might, you know, it might be a little bit easier to sleep if things go the way you may say they should have gone if they were actually guilty. But, you know, there's a lot of, I have a lot of sleepless nights and stressing about every decision that I make.
Right.
Because
right.
I do believe that every day of freedom is important. But no, and I'll tell you, when you see the cases that I remember over these past 15 years, the ones that really stick out in my mind, and I'll tell you, there are two cases where I was like, you know, I felt like almost bad for doing such a good job for my client. but there are many, many more cases where, you know, the laws, and then more so especially in federal court, because also practice in federal court and the drug laws, where crackheads are getting 20-year sentences, I've lost more sleep over those than over concerns about the guilt or innocence.
Right.
And representing somebody who may have actually done something.
Well, you know, I want to ask Judge Culler, I want to ask you now, have you ever been in front of presiding, and you saw, in your mind that is, you felt that the representation of the defense lawyer was so bad and that it would swing the case that the person is going to be guilty? I mean, has that ever come up in your courtroom? And what did you think about that? What did you feel?
I can't say that sitting as a judge that I have ever been presiding over a criminal case where I felt like the lawyer did a bad job such that it affected the outcome. And that's fortunate, because that's not to say that it might not ever happen. But we do have a lot of very talented attorneys in this town and in Mecklenburg County. And, you know, the public defender's office trains their employees very well to handle the cases. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I cannot think of a time where I felt like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I have to find this person guilty because of the job that the attorney has done. And I think that speaks highly of our criminal defense bar.
It does. You know, I'd like both of you now to tie up another 1 minute or so each, tie up why you think you're the best person for this job. Judge, you can go first.
Okay. First of all, I want to point out to your listeners that Mr. Wright and I are not running for the same seat. We are not in competition with each other. Like I had mentioned before, there are 21 different district courts judges in Mecklenburg County. I am running to keep my current seat, and I will be on the ballot in November. I think I'm the best person for my seat because I have 3.5 years experience on the bench already. I have over 20 years experience practicing law in every area of district court, which I mentioned before. I have a high level of experience in family court, which is where I'm primarily assigned, and which is a very deceivingly complicated area of the law. And I think that what I bring to the table with my experience, I have served with integrity over the last 3 years, and when people appear in front of me, I deliberately and think that it's of utmost importance that the judges, that all judges, and I try to do this, is that I'm absolutely fair. We have talked a lot about applying the law and about particular settings, but I think what is very important and what I try to do each and every day is to be fair and to treat everybody equally and to treat everybody with respect, whether you have the highest priced lawyer in Mecklenburg County or you're representing yourself. You deserve justice no matter whether or not you can afford to foot the bill, and no matter what's your background. And I would like to continue to serve in this capacity for many years to come. So I'd like to ask for your support and your vote in November. I do not have a primary. My name again is Judge Gina Culler, J-E-N-A, Gina Culler, C-U-L-L-E-R. And you can look up more information about me on my website at www.judgeculler.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mr. Wright?
Yes, my name is Rod Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. You may see signs, elect the right judge. I do have a primary May 8th. There are five attorneys who are vying for the seat. The judge who had the seat did not seek re-election, so there's no incumbent. So one of us five will go to the seat. The top two in May will go on to November, but I will be on the May 8th ballot, and the judges are in the bottom back of the ballot. And the reason I feel like I would be the best person, I have a tremendous amount of experience, which stacks up well against any one of my opponents. I've practiced in every area that district court covers, civil, domestic, juvenile. And I also have practiced on every level of court. I've practiced in North Carolina on state court, on the superior court level, North Carolina Court of Appeals, and I've won several cases there. Just this January of this year, I went to Raleigh and argued before the North Carolina Supreme Court. Just November of last year, I went to Richmond, Virginia, argued before the Federal Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. I've had several very complex state and federal jury trials and bench trials. And again, you won't hear any one of my competitors say that I do not have the experience. I have the judicial temperament. I have the life experiences. I want to try to make improvements. I don't want to stand for the status quo. I want to do everything possible to reduce this recidivism, and everyone who comes into my courtroom will be treated fairly, will be treated with respectfully, and they will have the law applied by a judge who knows the law, who is respectful of the law, who is respectful of them, and who is concerned and wants to make sure that everyone in this community is benefits, everyone in this community is safe and protected. And again, it's Rod Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, the right judge, T-H-E-W-R-I-G-H-T, judge.com. And I would like your support May 8th. You can also see me in the current issue of the Charlotte Post.
Okay, I want to thank both Judge Gina Culler and our lawyer candidate, Roderick Wright, for being on the show today. And we will have you back, and good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Know you guys can't get any better than that. So I want to thank both of you, and you can. I'm going to hang up on you now because we got other people in the queue.
Thank you so much, Mr. Larson.
Bye-bye. Okay. Let's see who we have here. We have, let's see. Oh, let's see now. Wait a minute. Let me put you on hold mute for a minute. You're on mute. Who's this?
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you'd like to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified for the caller.
Okay, hold. Let me go right here. Hello?
Hello.
Okay, who do we have on the line?
Harry Taylor.
Harry Taylor. And who else?
Kim Ratliff.
Kim Ratliff. Very good. Let's see who else is on this other line here if I get them up. Hello? Nope, not there yet. I guess they're not there. Don't see them. Hello? Oh, still got you two guys. Okay. We had a major problem. Everything went down. It couldn't get anything back up. I didn't even know if I was even on the air. But I got back. I had to reshuffle and redial everything back in. But since I have Kim Ratliff and Harry Taylor, both individuals that are running for the at-large position of county commissioner in Charlotte, North Carolina, Mecklenburg County. And I'd like to have Harry start first. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Harry.
Okay. I am, my name's Harry Taylor. I'm a at-large candidate for county commission here in Mecklenburg County. I am the same Harry Taylor that stood up and spoke to George Bush in 2006 here in Charlotte and made such a row around the world. I'm also the same Harry Taylor who ran for U.S. Congress against Sue Myrick in 2008. Many years ago, was influenced strongly by something that Dr. Martin Luther King said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. And that's why I stood up and spoke to Bush, and that's why I ran against Sue Myrick. I think so often anymore, especially on national levels and state levels, that we don't pay attention to what matters. We pay attention to everything but what matters. And here in Mecklenburg County, we have a lot of things that matter that require and demand our attention. You know, county is in kind of in the social services business, if you will. It deals with the Parks and Recs, Department of Social Services, budgeting, the jails, the sheriff's office. But nothing, absolutely nothing, is more important in Mecklenburg County than public education. I started working with young kids in 1982 when I was matched with a little brother who was 11 years old at the time. So he is now, 40 some odd years old. Since that time, I've worked with Habitat, with communities and schools, youth homes, North Carolina Outward Bound, 62 kids at last count. And I can tell you so often that they don't end up in any place that makes any sense. There's one kid that's in jail for murder, another kid that I visit regularly who's in jail. A lot of the kids, I don't know where they are, but for the most part, they've never effectively achieved what we would call a working adulthood. And it's because of a lack of education. And I think it is way past the time for us to show disinterest towards young people who grow up in our neighborhoods and our county who are unskilled, uneducated, unemployable, and imprisoned. We can do better, and we can do better by educating them better. I often am asked how you could start, and preschool education is the most important part of their one of those important parts of their lives, and I think that if we could start this great reading program for kids when they're 6 months old or 3 months old and read to them, they become fascinated, enchanted with what they find in books. And if they could walk into school at the age of 5 and 6 knowing how to read and be fascinated by what's in books, it would change everything. I have, for more than, almost 4 decades, been a commercial real estate broker. That's a profession in which you don't get paid for trying. You only get paid when you're able to close a transaction. And in order to do that, you have to be able to bring different groups of people with different agendas and different interests together to find a place that makes sense for everybody. We are aware that at the Board of County Commission level these days that there's been a lot of dysfunction, and we need to be focused as a board on making the best collective decisions for the people in Mecklenburg County, rather than become worried about our own agendas and a political party's agenda or some other agenda. Michael, I'm going to pass the mic back to you.
Yes.
And Kim, I just say that I would love the opportunity to serve as a leader in Mecklenburg County and talk about the things that matter, bring people together to make this community work better than it does.
Well, I was just about to take the mic from you anyway. So, Kim, tell us something about yourself.
Okay. I am Kim Michelle Ratliff. I am a native of Charlotte. I am committed to the people of Mecklenburg County, and I will bring understanding, dedication, and vision to the county commission. I've been involved in this community all of my life. Some of the things I've done in recent years, been a member of the Democratic Women, third vice chair, was a legislative chair for the Black Political Caucus, worked on Beverly Earl's campaign when she ran for mayor, 2007, Susan Burgess' campaign for about 6 years, many different times to help her get reelected to city council. Also was an executive board member for the Communication Workers of America, which is a union labor group. I was their legislative chair. And a lot of my training I actually got as a member of CWA, Communication Workers of America. A lot of my leadership training, public speaking, a lot of what I know about public policy, budgeting, all of those things I actually learned while I was a member of Communication Workers of America. Also, I am a member of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. I'm on the board of directors for the Latin American Coalition. I am the local chapter president for North Carolina Central University Alumni Chapter. I'm involved with my neighborhood association. I'm the vice president of the Holiday Hills Alexander Place neighborhood, and I have been a member of St. Luke Missionary Baptist Church. I graduated from Independence High School, went on from there to North Carolina Central University. And what I would do as a member of the county commission, as well as trying to get more people involved, you see the council meetings on TV, but when it scans across the audience, there's only people there if an issue is near and dear to their heart. But what I want to do is get the community engaged, and I want to work with the Charlotte Chamber to help get the community involved, to develop strategies to attract job opportunities to Mecklenburg County. I'm willing to provide more affordable services for our seniors, support fair and equitable initiatives to provide health care and services for all. I'm also able to collaborate with elected officials. As a member of Communication Workers of America, I lobbied at the local, state, and federal level, and I actually lobbied in D.C. for about 8 or 9 years. So I do have experience in working with elected officials. I do have experience in bringing policy to the table, getting it executed, getting things into action. So I am very credible. And again, like I said, I just want to bring understanding to the people of Mecklenburg County. I want to be a voice for those who currently don't have a voice, who don't know what services are available to them, where to get these services, how to get these services, and just bring a better overall understanding from an elected official standpoint, bringing the community together as a whole. And like I said, I'm willing to do these things. I'm willing to listen to the people of Mecklenburg County, which is not just all about Charlotte, not all about Center City or Ballantyne, but all of the citizens of Mecklenburg County. I am the visible choice. I've been in the community. I've heard the concerns of people, and I am ready to step up and take the challenge to be a leader in this community.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Harry, just to go to you first. What does the county commission do?
excuse me. The county commission is responsible. The part's main responsibility is budgeting and passing a budget, but it's also the eyes and ears of the citizenry. So things that happen in the county workforce and the county employment structure, some 5,000 people strong, is the board's responsibility to oversee as the go-between the citizens and the county government itself. I think that it's also responsible for looking at ways to do things in a different way. I think that to talk about a topic that's been new and hot, the revaluation circumstance that happened, I think that that's something that a lot of people are really upset about. There were some 40,000 appeals that were made after the tax values of properties in Mecklenburg County were reevaluated after 8 years. And I think that the county may have dropped the ball somewhat on that. I think they could have better anticipated the outcome, the public outcry after such a long period of no reevaluation. You know that the county is responsible at least once every 8 years for reevaluating, but we've had a huge run-up in property values over by the last 15 years until the market crashed in 2008. So we have this tremendous run-up in values and then tremendous loss in values as a consequence of the economic crash. And I think that the county probably could have said, gee, we're going to have a problem if we don't figure out how to do this better and be more transparent about how we're doing at this time, because these are really unusual circumstances, a real perfect storm to deal with. So I think the county commission can affect and change that, change perhaps how the Board of Equalization functions, change how its personnel is chosen. And the county commission can try to figure out ways to make something like that, a function like that, more user-friendly and more transparent for the citizens. And there's a number of things like that. I don't know if you one of the kids that I was talking about earlier, the 62 kids I've been visiting down at the central jail. And boy, I tell you, that is not a friendly place to go if you're a visitor. And I don't understand, and I've talked to Sheriff Chip Bailey about it, but why should people that that go to visit somebody that's imprisoned be intimidated? And why should that be such an intimidating thing to do? Those sorts of things are the kind of things that the county commissioners should be about, and also making the really hard decisions about how budgets are made. And we got a huge one coming up now with the school board about to ask the county for $27-some-odd million for teacher raises. And those are difficult decisions, but they're decisions that somebody has to make in behalf of the citizens of Mecklenburg County. So those are some of the things the county does, or the Board of County Commissioners does.
Okay. Kim, what do you you have anything to add to that?
Well, definitely I have plenty to add. Of course, we do the funding for CMS as well as Central Piedmont Community College.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, we cover the court system, the elections that are held, in the primary and general elections that are held yearly. We handle the libraries, park and rec, public health, public welfare, the recording of documents, and the solid waste disposal. All of those things follow, as well as your taxes, your property taxes, and the reevaluation like Harry spoke of. But all of those things fall under the umbrella of the role of a county commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a county commissioner, you do not get involved with the school system as is, but you do. What do you do as? And I'll put this to you, Kim. What do you do as far, or what can you do with the school system?
Michael, can you ask that again? You blipped out there for a second.
Yeah,
I missed part of what you said.
This is going to be directed to Kim first. As a county commissioner, the school system here, CMS, is part of your, as a county commissioner, your purview, because you do the budgeting. But what else are you involved with the county commission as far as the school system is?
Well, definitely you want to have a good working relationship with the school board system, but the main function of the county commissioner as it relates to CMS public schools is to support the funding of that. That's why you hear a lot of talk that now CMS school board is asking for the $27 million. That comes directly from Mecklenburg Board of County Commissioners. So that's their main function. That's how they relate to one another. But it still is, you know, my plan is to have a good working relationship with them so that you'll know how the money is being spent, because that money comes directly from our taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that it's being spent properly, and a lot of what the raise is going for, or what they're asking for it for, is to give the teachers a raise, which they haven't had a raise in 4 years. But we don't get into all the technical part of that. We are just responsible for the funding of it.
Now, let's see, Harry, what's your idea about how the county commission can affect the education system?
Well, you know, the teachers and the principals, that staff are all state employees, and they're paid by the state. And what What the county has the opportunity to do is supplement what the state gives and what the state does. The county is also responsible for all the real estate functions, so we own the, you know, all the schools and the school buildings. But what we're responsible for is we're able to embellish, as it were, what comes to the teachers and the school system from the state. And I think about what has been going on in the state legislature for the last now, what is it, about 13 or 14 months since 2010, people went in. Is it the state, state of North Carolina, will not fund increases to teachers and administrative personnel? And we've watched this kind of standoff between the legislature and Governor Perdue about this. I think it's, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's 0.75 cents increase in the sales tax, which tremendous amount of the proceeds of which would go toward supplementing incomes for the school administrators. So what we have the opportunity to do here is to supplement what the teachers get from the state, but we can't. Kim is right. There's, you know, we're not the school board. The county commission is not the school board, but we can influence the quality of the school by how we supplement what they're paid by the state,
mm-hmm.
as state employees.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you another question, both of you, and what do you think about, and I ask you, Kim, first, what do you think about consolidation?
Kim, do you want to go first?
Kim, this is directed to you.
Okay. Well, that question has come up a lot.
You think?
And I would say, and there's a lot of good discussion on both sides.
Because
I'm
telling you myself, I want consolidation. I mean, this is no longer, the Amityville or, Mayberry. We're bigger than Mayberry now.
Well, Charlotte and Mecklenburg County is definitely a growing city, growing county, and the state of North Carolina is growing. But briefly to answer that question, I would say that I am against consolidating, and my main reason, because as Charlotte is growing, it's becoming more and more diverse. I think that with the consolidation, we would lose some of that diversity.
Mm-hmm. When you say lose diversity, what kind of diversity are you talking about?
Representation, and as far as hearing some of the different communities.
Can you give a little more explanation of that? Because, all these major cities are consolidated. I mean, New York got more people in one apartment building than they have in the entire county of Mecklenburg. So, so consolidation didn't hurt them.
I'm saying as far as the different groups of people that are represented here. You have the Latino community, the Asian, Vietnamese, the Caucasian, African-American community. Our community is steady growing. I mean, we're busting at the seams, really, as far as growth. We can't build roads fast enough. We can't build enough houses fast enough, apartments or anything like that. So what I'm saying for all of these different groups that are coming here, and Charlotte's a great place to live, work, and play, but we want to make sure that all of these different diverse groups have a voice in the community.
Harry, what do you say?
I think that consolidation at the outset sounds like a great idea. We think of services that are repeated again and again at one point at a city level, whether it's Pineville or whether it's Charlotte or whether it's Davidson, and that we may be able to pare down the amount of people that are doing similar functions, and it sounds appealing up front, and maybe it will turn out to be appealing. But I think it's something we need to go very, not necessarily slowly, but we need to be very careful about how we do it. You know, when things grow, the bigger they get, the harder it is for all of us to access people that we want to talk to. And when organizations grow, they lose contact with them, with other parts of the organization. I read a really interesting book, and I can't remember the name of the book. Maybe The Wisdom of Crowds, I think it was called. And they were, this guy was talking about, or these authors were talking about, after 170 people, that's 170 people, their organizations lose their ability to stay in touch. Number one loses his ability to stay in touch with number 171. And the bigger we get, the harder it is to communicate within an organization. And again, I'm not saying that I'm against consolidation, but I'm also saying I'm not for consolidation if we lose our ability as citizens to influence or to access that organization. And that can happen when it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we got 5,000 employees in the county now. And if we had we consolidated, and we're really talking about right now is consolidation of Mecklenburg County and Charlotte, and not consolidation that includes Davidson and Cornelius and Huntersville, Pineville, Mid Hill, and Matthews, but Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. So it's an appealing idea that might save money, but it is also appealing. It's also an idea that might cause us tremendous frustration, and at some point we may say, "Gee, we were probably better off before we consolidated." So I'm not for or against. I just think it's something we need to be very, very careful about and understand what the pitfalls are of doing that.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is that the mere fact that we're growing is the reason why we need to consolidate. Because, you know, right now, I mean, and this is my opinion, right now, nobody's in charge of nothing. The city council blames the county commission. The county commission blames the city council. The county commissioner blames the mayor. The mayor blames the board of education. Hey, who's running this show here?
Well, they are. You're right. I mean, those are three different organizations with three different groups of leaders and have three different functions. And the community doesn't always know who does what. And
you think?
It's like you call up to get your you got a computer glitch, and you're trying to get it fixed, and they always blame the other guy. They blame the hardware or the software or the company you bought it from.
Right.
And it would make sense. I mean, that's an advantage to having one kind of go-to organization that you can speak to.
One person. You know, the thing is, when you have the mayor who's in charge of all the finances, budgets, everything for every city worker and every school, he's the one or she's the one you take out with the trash when you don't want them anymore. Today, we don't know who to take out in the trash. And the problem is that if we had a city council, one city council, which included county commissioners, you know, one 15-member council, hey, we now know who to blame. Because everybody will have specific things that they're supposed to do, and you know who it is. Just now, we're wandering around without a superintendent of schools. I mean, how the heck did that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, how the heck did that happen?
I had a problem with the water department about 6 months ago. And I had to call down to CMUD, and I say, who has responsibility for water, the city or the county? And so I know exactly what you're saying.
Right.
But then as it grows big, then it's harder and harder to access all the people because the organizations have grown so big. Again, Michael, I'm not saying if I had a chance to vote for today that I would vote for or against it.
No,
I just want to make sure that we make a good decision that we don't regret 2 years or 3 years or 5 years down the road because it becomes so unwieldy that it doesn't function any longer.
Well, see, that's the reason why I'm also for this part-time political garbage is nonsense. You need to be paid a full-time salary. City, county commission, and the mayor need to be paid full-time salaries so we can call you at 3 o'clock in the morning, curse you out, and then fire you. But today,
there's a lot going on now, Michael.
What's that?
There's a lot of that going on now.
Yeah, but they ain't getting fired.
Well,
that's the difference.
Can I interrupt for just a second and just make a comment about what you just said, Michael? You know, before paying if we consolidated and the school board and the Board of County Commissioners and the City Council were all incorporated into one board, whether it be 9 people or 15 people or 20 people, whatever it would be, what happens when what other places have experienced when they paid those people a living salary is they don't get the best people in the community to serve in those public places. And they find that what they found is there's a drop-off in the talent and ability and commitment of the people that serve on those organizations. And I'll leave that at that because, Kim, I don't want to take up your time.
Kim, I want to hear you because I got something to say to that. Go ahead, Kim.
Well, what I was going to say, just because you consolidate services where there is duplication does not mean that people are going to be more accountable. Some of the same issues that you have now with more than one board, with the city council, the school board, the county commission, some of those issues will still be around. So what needs to be addressed is where the problems are, where the loopholes are. First, let's get those fixed and then see if really consolidating all of these boards is the best answer for the community. Because at the end of the day, it's all about doing what's right for the people.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Their money.
Kim, you're absolutely correct. That's the reason why when you consolidate, means consolidate. It don't mean duplicate. So you need to get rid of some of these entities that have the lap over. But you need one person in charge that can take the fall for the whole agency or unit. You need to fire that one person. And that one person will be responsible because they're getting paid the bucks to make sure it runs. And you see, the problem is that we also have a voter who they don't care about who's running the show.
Well, our voters are not informed.
They're not informed. That's right. Because hey, I can pick the first 7 people I go to on the street, and I will be able to, I'll ask them, what does your city councilman do or what your county commissioner does, and I guarantee you they will not be able to tell me. They will not be able to tell me. And that's the problem, because we have voters that are, and I was talking about this beforehand, they're low-information voters by choice or because they just don't have the information. Whatever it is, they don't know who does what. And that is something that I believe the parties need to start looking at and start explaining to the people, hey, look, this is what this job does. More people need to do that. More people running for office need to do that. And, you know, whether or not they think that's something that they just can't get into, because it will take too much of a bite out of their trying to get elected. I have no idea. I don't know that particular end of it. But I think that when we think along consolidation, it's something that should, if it's handled correctly, should prevent duplication. Harry, what do you think?
Well, I feel like that's the same thing we've been talking about. And I don't disagree with your logic and reasoning, but I would not be in favor. Like right now today, with saying we're going to pay people, $100,000 a year to sit on a city council has responsibility.
Oh no, absolutely not. No, you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. No, Kim, what do you have to say about that? What I just said.
As far as making it a full time job.
Yes.
Well, yes. I definitely don't think that that's something that elected officials should be responsible for answering. I think the people of the community, that should be something that should be addressed to them. But at the same time, you look at just yesterday, the school board had all these forums around town where you could meet the three finalists for the school board superintendent.
Right.
Wasn't a lot of participation, a lot of people didn't show up, hasn't been a lot of dialogue, a lot of questions asked or anything like that, but we're down to the final three. So the question is, how do you really get the community interested in what's important to them? I mean, who's going to be the superintendent is important to us as parents, as children, but if we're not getting out there finding out who's the best candidate, then we're leaving that up to somebody else. And anytime,
go ahead.
Anytime you're not taking advantage of your opportunity to have a say, that makes you less educated and less informed about the issues. And when that person is put into place, don't come complaining about it then, saying, oh, well, why'd they pick that person? Or I didn't have my opportunity to say anything, because you did have an opportunity to say something.
Well, you know, yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I preach that all the time. But I'm involved in the party.
I'm not even talking about regular everyday people, Michael.
What's that?
I'm talking about the regular voters.
No, I understand. I was going to get to that point. What I was trying to say was that I'm involved in the party. I didn't even know they had three people. I didn't know any of these three people. The problem is that the government agency, Board of Education, or the not the Board of Education, but the Education Committee, the County Commission, they should have been pushing who these people were to the people. They didn't do that. I never heard of these three people that were running. Never, although even being considered. Was there only three? How many was there? Was it 10 or
15? It was originally 89 that applied for the job.
Okay. See, now, I guarantee you, 8 out of 10 people who vote in this county didn't know there was 89 people applying. Now, how come that you can't blame the people for that? You got to blame the entity that has taken the names.
Well,
Did you see any place in the newspaper that had all 89 names?
Well, they didn't do. They didn't put all 89 names on there for a good reason, and because most of those people, those 89 people, were employed someplace, and they didn't want their current employer to know that they were applying for a job elsewhere. So I thought there was a good reason not to disclose for the personal privacy of all those people that didn't make the short list. But we know that Peter Gorman left quite some time ago.
That's fine. What you're saying, Harry, yes, I understand that portion of it. But the three finalists, their names weren't out there. I didn't see it on TV. I didn't see it. I saw it on the newspaper a couple of days ago when they picked.
But they made clear, the school board made clear what their process was going to be, and they said they're going to narrow that list down to three. And when they narrow it to three, then they're going to disclose who the three finalists are.
Right.
But the people that care are the people that care about public education.
Right.
People that have kids in the public
yes.
schools. But there's right. a vast amount of people that are older. Their kids are grown. They don't have kids yet. They've got kids in private schools or charter schools that just don't pay much attention. And public education affects every single one of us. And
absolutely. Whether you have kids in school or not, it affects us.
Say again?
It affects us whether you have children in school or not.
Absolutely it does. Yeah. I mean, what if we could pair the our share of the law enforcement, criminal justice, and the sheriff's department, the jails, by 20%, and take that money and give it to the school system. What if over time we could do that, and then we could take another 20%, and we, instead of having the jails and criminal justice and the court system and law enforcement take up so many of these resources, only take it. Why don't we use it to educate people? So that everybody has a great education, and all of a sudden you find right here in Charlotte the next Bill Gates or the next great inventor, the next Thomas Edison or somebody like that.
Well, we're running on short. I hate to cut you off, Harry, but we need to tie up some loose ends. Kim, can you tie up why you want to become county commissioner?
Definitely. I have been visible in the community. Now I want to be an elected official to give more voice to the people of the community. For more information on Kim Ratliff, you can check out my website, which is kimformeckcounty.com. That's formeckcounty.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as well. Reach out to me. Send me an email. I still need volunteers, need donations, all of these things. I'm still visiting churches, neighborhood meetings. I'm all over the county. Reach out to me wherever you see me. Again, that's Kim Ratliff, the visible choice for Mecklenburg County Commission at large.
Thank you, Kim. And Harry, could you tie it up for – we got about 45 seconds.
Okay. I believe that Mecklenburg County is a great place, a special place, but it could be more special with leadership that cares more about people, especially young people, and about the future. And I want leaders that are willing to stand up and talk about things that matter, just like Dr. Martin Luther King said when he said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. I want leaders that will stand up and speak for all of us.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Harry.
I'm Harry Taylor. I'm running for county commission. You can find me on Facebook at Vote for Harry Taylor and and on the internet as well by Googling me, or go to harrytaylorforcountycommission.org.
I want to thank both of you. We had a glitch in the system. We couldn't get the other two people that were calling in on, but we will have them. I'm going to set up a date, see if I can get them for next Tuesday. But I want to thank both of my guests, Kim Ratliff and Harry Taylor, who are running as candidates for at-large county commission.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate your
Thanks,
time.
Michael.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in.
Okay. We got 90 seconds before we're on the air. I know we have a caller in. Hello, who's this caller? Hello? Well, they're gone, and we're gone. I want to thank everybody for listening. And remember, it is your influence that counts. Get out and vote. This is the last word. And I'm Michael Lawson.
Hello, got you now. Yes. I can't, you keep, why don't you text me? I kept saying, text me, don't call me. I can't talk to you, but I'm talking online. Yes. You text me? They had a problem with the queue coming in. You were in, but I couldn't pick you up. And it just solved it just now when we refreshed it. So I'm going to have you and Hillman on next Tuesday. What do you got doing Tuesday? Okay. Well, now you know what they say. Of course, neither one of them has any idea what the county commission does. Yes? Yes? Well, but you see, now, and that's what you need to stress when we put you on Tuesday. That's what you need to see. You know how easy that is. This is like shooting ducks in a barrel. And neither one of them was for, and I tried to ask about the consolidation, and they didn't have a good idea. Harry was a little more lucid than Kim was, but even he, well, I don't know. I said, you know, hey, you can fire people if you now know who does the job. Today they push the buck around like it's going out of style. I mean, how is that not even reasonable? And about picking these daggone superintendents. Are you kidding me? Where was it published that they were even doing this? If you didn't go down to the daggone city, into the chamber, you never even knew there was 89. Where was it published? We got 89 people we're looking at. People don't know that. Because they don't keep people involved. They don't want people to know what they're doing. I mean, come on. Is that right? I mean, come on, that's nonsense. That's complete nonsense. And the problem is, if they're consolidated, now there'll be a few people that the people, the voters, have to look at instead of everybody. Because they don't know who to blame now. When they consolidate, you know who to blame. See, they don't want that. And because half these people wouldn't have jobs. Half these people running for office wouldn't have jobs. I mean, you consolidate the city council and county commission, half them people wouldn't have a job. I mean, they don't want that. That's bad for them. So they'd rather take a lower salary and get this pittance of money that they're paying them right now than have a $60,000 or $70,000 salary where people would be looking at them. That's what that's all about, please. And then he didn't even mention Huntersville and Cornelius. What, are you kidding me? You're right. So that's a perfect segue that you need to talk about. Oh, no, please, you got my phone blown up here. I know you were trying, but I couldn't open up the queue. It hung up because and the first were you on and I thought you were coming to the house here. Well, see, I'm gonna now I have to eat your food that I had. No, hell no. I said now I have to eat the food that I prepared for you. I mean, we had crab salad. We had bunch of stuff, crab salad and shrimp salad and a bunch of salads and yeah, if it's left, I'll eat it tonight. Yeah. He is. See, well, wait, are you supposed to call in or go down there? Well, good, you go down there anyway. So, what were you supposed to bring with you? All right, well, hey, here I am. That's what you, okay, but what time is that? Yeah, because I want to make sure. But see, well, I don't have any. I need to get you earlier then, because I need to. I have some stickers. I need to have. Yeah, I know. That means what time are you supposed to be down there with him? Oh, you're supposed to be down there at 8 o'clock? Okay, and what time is the show going? Oh, and what time are you going to be off, out of there? Yeah, but you're not in for the whole show. Oh, okay. Well, then call me or fax me or text me when you're out of there. I'll go down to the school. All right? That'd be good. Good. What's that? Yeah. Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can leave them. Right. Yeah, Leon. Right. Mm-hmm. No, but I'm a caller. I'm going to get on the phone with you and call Vera. Tell Vera that she needs to come down to that the convention. So because we need to hand out these stickers and hand out your business cards and all that other stuff. Okay, good. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. I'm going to put out signs probably. I got to find out when Thomas is off, and we can go out at night and flash them all over. Yep. Yep. Yeah, well, I want to do Harris Boulevard. I got to do all of Harris Boulevard from Independence all the way up to, say, Mallet Creek. And then I want to do Independence. And then he's going to do out there where he lives, because he lives over by Carowinds. We have that way covered. So, you know, we'll get him. So we're going to need probably, I'd say, at least 100. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll find out from Thomas what night he's off, if he's off this weekend or not. Then if he is, then I can call you and we can get these signs and we can put them out. All right. Gotcha. So plan on Tuesday. Look at your calendar. 3 o'clock. Let me make sure that Tuesday is good for me, too. And looking at this, but plan on Tuesday. Let's see, make sure there's nothing happening on Tuesday. Is there a Tuesday? Oh, no, I have nothing, so that's good. Yep, that's a start. Because Thursday's the start of early vote. All right. Bye. Boy, I tell you. It's the whole thing. Right in the middle of me, I had 7 people lined up here, and as soon as I clicked over to one, the rest of them went blank, and my screen went back. I was talking. I didn't even know I wasn't on live. I had to go back into queue. Something happened to the connection.
Again? What, is it you for baby?
I don't know if it was AT&T or if it was Blog Talk Radio that had the bad connection. I don't know.
How do you find out?
I'm going to find out.
Okay. I called the bus driver. That's said, have you heard from Miss Lockhart? And he said, I heard from her aunt. They called to confirm and that they were going. But I was trying to get Miss Lockhart all day. But see, I didn't tell her she didn't come into work. So he said, yeah, she's going. She's supposed to be be going, and her aunts and her cousins, oh, they're going. So I said, okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow. So, and I went in the bank, it doubled. Today's Friday. I mean, lines, I couldn't stay there. I only have a half an hour for lunch. And then I went there today, and the lines were out because the weekend. So maybe you're going to have to, you and I can go to the window, to the ATM, and use your card. And get some money
up.
$35 for the ride. And I don't even have a car. Did you get the mail?
No mail. Well, unless it came late.
I won't get the car. Maybe it's
tomorrow. No, you won't get into it.
Did you get a chance to send
an
income tax
bill? Yeah. I'm getting nothing back with this no time soon. Forget about the income tax.
No, I'm
yes, yes.
So you want to go out later to get money for me?
Yeah, well, we'll go out later. Let's you just said that. Okay. Didn't you just say, here, take out the food we need. He got tied up. Because
I saw Maurice walking out to the road. He didn't have anything
to do,
so I don't know.
He's walking on Flat Road
with. He came out of their block, and I just see a guy walking like Maurice. And, you know, with his white shirt on his hat. So you want to give them, because Samantha's working.
Give me a call so you can. Thank you. Bye bye.
So, Samantha's working today, so.